I ultimately believe that humans should be the decision makers in any large like financial decision like this. So we're not having AI execute on ideas or execute on trades. Our goal is to provide people with the intelligence that they need to make decisions effectively. I think the companies that are going to make the biggest profits or be the biggest change makers are actually going to be companies that gather unique data sources, create a moat, and then leverage generative AI on top of it as a standalone feature.
Hi, I'm Rachel Chalmers, and this is Generation Ship, the podcast at the intersection of infrastructure and artificial intelligence. We are the generation that's exploring generative AI. We are a finite group of people with a finite set of resources, and we have to share this infrastructure. We have to find fair and ethical ways to do that. The first generation ship has already set sail. It's the planet Earth, and you and I are the crew. This show is brought to you by Heavybit, the leading investor in developer-first startups. To learn more about Heavybit, visit heavybit.com. Josh Firstus is a fintech founder, startup advisor, and startup community leader. His background is a combination of sales, strategy, software engineering, and expertise in the intelligence and security technology industry. While studying at Northeastern Illinois, Josh worked as employee number one of SupplyMind, a SaaS-based ERP system for hospitals and critical care facilities. After 3 years at Motorola, he has become a strategy advisor to half a dozen startups, a venture partner with Executive Council Network, the executive director and head of the Chicago chapter of Founders Network, and maybe most importantly, founder and CEO of InQued, automating financial reporting while gathering insight and intelligence for VC, private equity, and banks. Josh, thank you for coming on the show. It's great to have you.
Thanks, Rachel. I'm happy to be here.
As a startup founder, what does the current mania for AI and machine learning mean to you? Do you plan to incorporate, say, Gen AI into your product?
So like you were talking about SupplyMind there a second ago. SupplyMind was an AI company, actually. We were doing AI for the supply chain back in like, this was probably 2014, 2015. So one, we are putting AI into InQued in a variety of different ways. But it's really interesting to me to see that AI is like popping off in this big way, but has been there for so long. And I mean, maybe the question is like, is it just generative AI, right? This like the thing right now that everyone's getting crazy about?
Yeah, exactly. I think because ChatGPT just like hit this inflection point and became, you know, able to pass the Turing test, everyone is equating that with AI. But as you say, you know, we used to call this big data, and before that we called it stats, and before that we called it Bayesian inference. It's not something entirely novel. It's the Gen AI that has brought it front and center to the conversation.
I think it'll change the ecosystem a lot, but I also am hesitant to think of these as like fully formed companies in a way that just are making generative AI. Like the more interesting companies to me are the picks and shovels companies that are enabling it from the base of it. And then I think the companies that are going to make the biggest profits or be the biggest change makers are actually going to be companies that gather unique data sources, create a moat, and then leverage generative AI on top of it as a standalone feature. Especially the way this is moving with like OpenAI AI's app store. It's more of a feature in my mindset than it is like an entirely new product. OpenAI is the product, or like Llama is the product. This is just a new way of interpreting data that I think will become the market standard, almost in the same way that like we had software before the iPhone came around, but the way that you interacted with the software dramatically changed. Or like when Google Home and Alexa and stuff that came out and we could interact with software for voice, this is just a new paradigm or a new medium by which we expect the user experience to work. I don't know. I think I'm pretty excited about it, but I'm pretty excited about things that like haven't happened necessarily yet or just a bridge of happening. Like from a feature set standpoint, auto GPTs are really, really interesting to me and I want to see where those go. But for InQued, what we really want to do, because we've taken all this financial data, is figure out how to do like scenario analysis as well as sentiment analysis. What I mean by sentiment analysis is like, okay, so you're going to take in like all these Twitter posts and all the news articles on the web or on a company, all this kind of qualitative information. And then you can squeeze down all that qualitative information to gain unique insights. That's really powered by the fact that like these models can now access the internet. And that feature by itself is basically entirely displacing or will eventually displace entire companies like Brandwatch, who have built a reputation on sentiment analysis. So I almost think that this is going to empower like really, really well-made SaaS solutions more than anything. And then the companies that try to build themselves as just a GPT with a twist, I think that in much the same way that kids were making like flashlight apps for the iPhone or things like Flappy Bird, I actually think that's going to be like an entry point for software development, not necessarily something that'll gather a magnificently large amount of funding because there's no moat to it.
Yep.
You know, the data is the moat.
Yeah, I like that analysis and I hope you're right because to me, the real promise of Gen AI in particular is to democratize access to what has been, you know, pretty arcane levels of data manipulation. If the value really is in the differentiated data sets, then it gives scrappy founders like you a chance to pull together a really differentiated data set as you're hoping to do and build something really valuable on top of that.
Yeah, I think it helps like existing like large enterprises as well. Like imagine this, imagine you're like Blue Cross Blue Shield and you're trying to figure out which plan you need to have, you know, a PPO and whatever, whatnot, right? What premium I should have and all these different coverages. I'm talking to something and it just telling me here are the best options instead of looking at, like, honestly, healthcare.gov could use this.
Yeah.
That would be probably great for them just to help the average person find these things. So I think it'll help small companies and big companies alike. I think that small companies seem to just look up on the data tree of being like, what have people not exploited yet? What do people not have? And then make access to that information really easy, but paired with something else. Like, I'm starting to believe in this paradigm of like, all software is taking two things that haven't been smushed together and smushing them together and then making it more accessible than it was before and then connecting it to other things. It's like all we want is like effectively roads that connect the knowledge ecosystem and we want faster cars that drive on the roads. And it'd be nice if my fast car could also have the functionality of like a hatchback or a pickup truck so it can do more than one thing. That's a bad analogy potentially, but...
Yeah, I think you're thinking of trains. Trains can do that.
It is what trains do, yeah.
You're sort of anticipating my next question, which is around how might generative AI in particular or machine learning and more generally change the way software is developed and deployed? And what will that mean for early stage founders like you?
I think it'll make rapid prototyping dramatically faster. I don't think just for startup founders, I think it'll start in startups, but it'll move upwards. I think that we'll be able to create companies so much more capitally efficient, where actually the average raise amount, I think will go down, not just in accordance with the fact that we're kind of in an economic cooldown right now, but more or less because you don't need as many developers or even as many marketing people or salespeople or customer support people in the future. So you'll have very, very lean teams that don't have a ton of hierarchy. There's maybe like one or two layers of management in a company that normally would have like multiple. So I think it's probably 80 to 90% improved efficiency in these companies within 20 years.
It's interesting that your mind went to the hierarchy in the small organizations because I hadn't specifically thought of that angle, but I think you're right. You know, we've already had folks on the show who are working with ChatGPT like it's a junior engineer and pair programming with it. But the idea of like, that VP of engineering within an early stage startup being able to do a lot of individual contributing him or herself and then having a much smaller team and getting a lot further with it. It reminds me of when the cloud appeared and suddenly you didn't spend your entire Series A on a sunny 10K. You spent it on an AWS subscription and it was a tenth of the size and you got way further with it.
Yeah. And I think that like the hierarchy is really important because it's, as organizations scale, I think a lot of the like the blockages to getting tasks done is effectively the communication between levels, where it's like, how many people have pushback does this idea need to go through before we can go to a yes-no decision, right? And if you can make executive decisions very, 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 very quickly, then everything moves much faster. I feel like you have a lot of employees that are just waiting around inside of these big companies because they can't make executive decisions and they're not really working on like highly productive things. But if the CTO can just continuously make executive decisions around the product, like imagine this, like having AI design like user interfaces or like do Figma mockups very, very quickly. The head of engineering isn't usually great at design work, But by getting the design work out of the way, and maybe you can take that Figma, I've seen things like this, where you can take a Figma file and convert it into something that you can actually place directly in software rather easily. I think it'll cut down dramatically on the amount of work that needs to be done or the amount of heads. And it's like every single person, think about like D&D, like in D&D, like different characters have, they have, you know, there's a bunch of skills. In some skills you have proficiencies in, which means you can do them better. And the other skills, you can have like double proficiency, which means expertise. And you can have like one person has like 10 skills of the 20 skills and the other person has the opposite 10 skills, or you overlap in a few different areas. Instead of needing 10 people that all have unique different skills and you're all speaking different languages to each other.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I mean, it all comes down to rapid prototyping, but you're talking about prototyping things that we hadn't thought of before, like prototyping org charts and prototyping go-to-market and A-B testing. Yeah.
All the admin work.
Yeah.
It's all of the admin work inside of the large orgs and the startups, which I think is like the biggest blocker to like productive labor.
Yeah.
Because it's the things that you don't really want to do. It's like when we started having more fractionalized roles, like fractional CMOs and CFOs and things like that. It's because a lot of the, like a fractional CFO, a CFO isn't a great value add for a startup. They don't really have a full-time job to do that. So it's like, it might as well be on the outside.
Yeah.
And they can serve like 10 companies. Same with a marketing agency or a design agency. So I think it'll just be more and more and more things will be fractionalized. And eventually you'll have, I see it as almost a bunch of little puzzle pieces. Like all the companies are little puzzle pieces and they all can like fit into one another for the job that needs to be done at that individual little time, like a fractal.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just see it as tons of little micro businesses.
Yeah.
Is our future.
Yeah. I mean, I'm almost working in that mode already. So yeah, I can see it.
What's so interesting to me about it is that like you have this generation, like millennials, but then you have like Gen Z and the upcoming generation after them, where people more and more are focused on freedom. Freedom from work, don't have a 9-to-5, less working hours, 4-day work weeks, all these kind of things. But for me, what that comes down to is just people want more autonomy. They go to school to become creative thinkers, where education is higher among the average individual every single generation. So we're going to have to treat everyone like an individual, effectively. And as people want more freedom, I think that they'll engage in capitalism from the standpoint of creating their own companies to achieve that freedom. And it's like, this used to be just in the Gilded Ages, right? Like big industrialists. And then it's like software was the real thing that changed this in the long term. It's like, we can make a giant company with only a few people's labor. But now I think you'll be able to do everything. And the precursor to that, I think, is like these Shopify stores and these like Etsy stores and all these little like micro businesses that you're seeing popping off because people want to provide for themselves and have a fairly unstructured life, where they're in control of it.
Are you worried at all about the risks of widespread use of commercial large language models, especially in financial applications like yours? Are we at risk of baking algorithmic bias into our systems?
So for our approach, I don't think so. And I'm sure everyone says that. But like the reason for that is like, I ultimately believe that humans should be the decision makers in any large like financial decision like this. So we're not having like AI execute on ideas or execute on trades or, you know, do anything like that. Our goal is to provide people with like the intelligence that they need to make decisions effectively. And then we're solving for that on the AI side by having incredibly high levels of data security. That said, I think there's concerns to be had about things where the AI is taking direct action. And I mean, let's just say that we'll have to move past. I think that continuously, like automation becomes scarier and scarier and scarier. But I have pretty high trust in society that we'll overcome that and we'll figure out a way to make this safe. But it is a worry.
It's refreshing to hear someone having faith in society these days.
Yeah.
What are some of the ways you think we might be thinking about mitigating those risks? I mean, you talked about human in the loop in your application. That's obviously a powerful one. What else should we be thinking about?
I know like regulation continues to come up and things like that, but ultimately, I think that the software will be created to solve this problem. Like there will be software platforms that exist that check models for credibility. And that in the same way that you get like SOC 2 compliance or something, then you can put the little badge on your website. I imagine in the future that you'll have like almost AI model compliance for how the level of accuracy and you'll display that on your website like any other kind of data security. And we'll create almost like a private standard for what is acceptable of an AI model for to deploy just certain use cases, be it government grade or be it like commercial or consumer grade.
Sounds good. How do you hope that AI might improve the world?
I think there's dramatic ways to improve the world. Like I was talking about personal freedom earlier, and it's probably like the biggest thing I think it'll give us is just our time back. Uh-huh. Like the more time that people have to be creative, like even just to think, like a lot of people that like say you work in like a factory or working on like a farm or something like that, and you don't have as much time to contemplate and to, I don't know, maybe just be human. I might be minimalizing a little bit. But I think it'll allow us more time to spend on endeavors that make us feel like us and less time on endeavors that bore us to death, to be frank. Hopefully more time with our families, more time with our kids, more time making memories, and more time using our brains and less time doing repetitive tasks.
That sounds really good. What are some of your favorite sources for learning about AI?
There's a guy named Wes Roth on YouTube that has some very, very good AI videos. I think Lex Fridman is like a staple.
Yeah.
Or like everyone knows about Lex Fridman.
We'll put all these in the show notes, folks, so you'll be able to look those up. All righty. It's daydream time. I'm going to make you God Emperor of the solar system.
Yeah.
For the next 5 years, everything goes your way. What does the world, the industry look like in 5 years?
I just want people to be happier. Like, I want everyone to have a friend, you know? Like, I think that's the saddest thing that's gone on since COVID is that, like, the lack of community and things like that, like getting people together.
That's interesting. I would say my online community has gotten way more ride or die since the pandemic. I think a lot of what used to be on the open web has retreated into private forums like Slacks and Discords. But I think those four are relatively thriving.
So I agree with you there. And I think I was well adjusted to it. I grew up playing like games like World of Warcraft, where like I'm a child of the internet effectively. But like the more I talk to people that are like younger than me that like went to like high school during COVID and things like that, or went to college during COVID, like there's a lot of social anxiety out there. And there's a lot of anxiety and depression, like how Instagram affects young girls and things like that. And I don't really like that. I'd rather people be able to live freely as themselves without the whirlwind of like politics is culture. And yeah, I think I just want people to be more free. There's some other things I want. Like I'm really concerned about like the state of like water and fertilizer in West Africa. That's something that I talked to you about before, where like I think there's going to be a fertilizer crisis. And then specifically people in like Nigeria are really going to suffer from that because their population was basically grown on having all these farming inputs that might not be available in the future. So I don't know. We're in a rough time. And I just want people to be happier, I think, more holistically.
Yeah, I think that's why you and I get along so well.
Yeah.
One last question, Josh. If you had a colony ship to fly to the stars, what would you name it?
I was thinking about this actually earlier. Have you seen Battlestar Galactica?
Of course.
Okay. Anyhow, this isn't directly correlated, but somewhat like where it's like, I have two ships and I call them Adam and Eve. So I think it'd be like an interesting way to like restart humanity on another planet where then it's like almost goes back to like the birth of Western culture and like how we conceptualize the beginning of time from that kind of perspective.
Okay, a little heteronormative, but it's original and I like where you're going with this.
Thanks.
Josh, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's been a delight as always and good luck with everything.
Thank you.
That's all we have time for today. If you're interested in being a guest or if you know someone awesome I should interview, hook up with us online. We're available where all fine social medias are sold. This show is brought to you by Heavybit, the leading investor in developer-first startups. To learn more about Heavybit, visit heavybit.com.